This is RSVNB Update, episode 530, recorded Friday, August 14th, 2015. Freaky Friday. Hello, everybody, and welcome to RSVNB Update once again. As we mentioned last week, Earth is out. He's moving tomorrow, so that's a perfectly logical excuse for the planet. But do not worry, we have two great co-hosts joining me this week. First up is Colton from Informer. We heard from him a few weeks ago.
That's me.
And Majbid from RS Weekly, another RuneScape podcast. Welcome.
Greetings, Scapers, and thank you, Shane, for having me on.
Pleasure to have you, and, you know, we should have probably done this sooner, but we just didn't cross paths in the immediate time, but we're doing it now, and that's what counts.
Indeed, indeed.
So, Fistagothics this week. This seems as though it's an update that should have come out a long time ago, and I don't know if it's going to have the impact that Jagex wants. So let's just start off by saying, are you guys fans of Fistagothics, or were you fans at one point?
I have never played a game of Fistagothics, I'll be real honest.
I've played Fistagothics a few times, maybe back in 2006, 2007, during a short stint of being free-to-play. And I have to say, I've never been a big fan of PvP in general. And I don't know, it didn't hold my interest. And I think the reason for that was mainly the rewards were and always have been lackluster.
Yeah, and that is one of the things they improved this week. But the sense I got from this update is it's still the same Fist of Gothics with minor changes from before. And I don't know if that's enough to push it over the edge and make it something that people will do when it's not on the minigame spotlight. The hype dies down after a couple weeks.
I think that's the case with a lot of the minigames. I think that's kind of the purpose of the minigame spotlight, is to almost kind of shoehorn people into minigames that aren't liked, which is kind of an unfortunate role for the spotlight system, because I don't think that was its original intention.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I just, with Fistagothics especially, it was meant for mid to low level players. And
yeah. Especially free-to-play.
And it's hard because, obviously, today, with the current demographic that is playing the game, you've got primarily higher levels, and so people will go to this because it's a novelty aspect, and you've got new rewards and new cool stuff, but in 6 months, will that hold true? I highly doubt it. Is it a fault of the content? No. And my concern really is they keep going back to dead minigames and trying to revive them by adding new rewards, but would it be wiser to instead look at newer content? And I don't want to say just let it die, because I just don't know, because to me it feels like if it's they're trying to force it and it's on life support, and they're trying. This is like sort of a last ditch attempt to, hey, go to Fistagothics, guys. There's new cool rune crafting gloves, which you'll love. We promise. So I don't know. I'm a little skeptical, but it's something.
You're right. It is something. I want to start with the accessibility and quality of life rather than rewards. But first off, you only need 4 players to begin now, not 8.
I think that is a good idea, most definitely. Just the fact that finding players off of the, you know, spotlight is hard enough as it is, and I think that it's a good idea to lower the number overall.
Mm-hmm. Players can now also use all 3 combat styles inside the arena, even when hunted.
So you weren't allowed to do that before?
Yeah, that blows my mind, to be quite honest.
What was it limited to? Because I'm like you, I haven't gone back there since it first came out.
Yeah, I couldn't answer that, to be honest. Like, it doesn't, to me, make any logical sense to restrict a combat style. I don't actually even remember that being the case when I used to play it back in the day. I don't know if that was a restriction that they added later on due to some sort of, you know, issue they were having with the game mechanics or what, but yeah, I can't really give any more information one way or another on that.
I'm betting that it was more of a thing where you couldn't bring like multiple styles in, and I don't know.
It may have been,
sense, I guess. I think.
Yeah, and that probably makes the most sense.
And with, you know, the evolution in combat, that would have been entirely counterintuitive to what they were going for. So that why it took from 2012 to 2015 to adjust Fistogothix?
It's just that few people playing it.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, it's not going to be a priority when it's such a niche game.
We want real game updates. That's generally what everyone's yelling on the forums constantly, at least.
Yeah.
Well, this was courtesy of the Ninja team, so it didn't take too much away. UI got a bit of an update, so that's good. Gamer's Grotto entrance has been moved closer to the road from the Falador Lodestone, so making it even easier to get to these ones.
I wonder if it messed up any clue scroll stuff, because isn't there a maybe it's a medium clue scroll dig spot near there, but when they move stuff, they tend to forget clue scrolls and locations for dig spots. So I wonder.
Yeah,
if they
I mean,
right.
Even when
area.
They remove walls and whatnot, you have force walk tiles that get left in place for months at a time. So it's entirely possible something like that will crop up. 2-minute cooldown penalty for forfeiting, which is
I saw a lot of people complaining about that on the forums. Just the fact that there's already penalties for leaving a game, why add more?
Why would you
forfeit and then expect to get in right away?
According to what I was reading on the forums, and I'm mostly playing devil's advocate in this scenario, but from what I was hearing, a lot of players were angry at the fact that you already take a reward hit for the next time you play, as far as whatever the reward currency is, tokens, Fistogothix tokens or whatever.
Yep.
They already appear at a reduced rate if you forfeit already. And the reason behind that was a lot of people keep getting mismatched with players that are like drastically higher level than them, mainly probably because of the lack of pool of players to pull from. So like a 100 gets paired with a 138 and has absolutely no chance of winning. So they leave and start over, and then they can't for 2 minutes and yada, 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 you know, cry me a river, I guess.
Well, speaking on that front, I got paired with a 118 today and he had no chance.
Exactly. Now, I mean, that's just, you know, that's how the bones roll sometimes. It's like it's RNG, I guess, but I don't know. That was the only argument that made a slight amount of sense to me as to why. I don't know. I guess it would be like any other game. It's if you forfeit, you're disrupting the game for everyone, and there needs to be some sort of punishment, whether or not you know, you are actually in the right of the scenario or not. You kind of just need to go with the flow, I guess, is more
and
the,
I mean,
overarching, you know.
2 minutes is not that long. Get up, go get a drink, use the restroom, that kind of thing, and go right back in after.
Exactly. XP waste, man. XP waste.
It's true.
Music
tracks, Gothic's Hunter and Waiting for the Hunt have been reworked. Oh, boy. Music.
I hope they're orchestral versions.
They haven't been doing orchestral versions.
They only did that.
Just sort of spruced them up. It's
for the RS3 music.
We changed it from 96 to 128 kilo. You're like, oh, come on. I want to hear orchestra music, man. This is 2015. Sorry, rant over.
No, that's I would love it, but.
It's a question of, just like the voice acting, everyone wants a voice acted quest, but money.
They want their quests out. They want their quests out fast. So
exactly.
Voice acting is an amazing immersion factor for me. I love voice acting. I don't want to get too off topic here, but I'm just saying, like, I don't know. I think the quality of the game is drastically improved when they, you know, actually use high quality music and voicing and all that stuff.
Oh yeah. And
I thought they
for me,
killed
that's,
it in Fate of the Gods with that, yeah.
That's what made RS3. was the musical score. But anyways, continuing on, Fistagothic's tokens now have a convert option and will no longer be awarded in physical form. Thank you. It's a bank space that I can free up.
My words exactly.
While we're on the token front, seeing as all the other minigames have the common Thaler currency, no Thaler use in Fistagothics, at least for the time being.
Oh, yeah, all the new items are, you completely actually have to go for them, and I think that's, again, trying to kind of nudge people into playing a minigame that they don't want to play.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, a bit of a foreshadowing of my opinion of the rewards, they're not really that worth that much. Anyways.
I don't know.
For the amount of time invested to actually receive them, I'm going to have to go with Shane on that. I mean,
really?
If
that's what it comes down to. Yeah, but we'll talk about that in just a few moments.
Okay.
Now onto the balance changes. Player trails have been disabled. You remember there used to be a little sparkly thing that would follow you around, kind of like the stone has now.
I think it's genius to the first person who discovered that you could use trails inside of there, because that just completely breaks the game.
Yeah.
Found you. Yeah.
Healing spells and abilities can no longer be used. I have a question about this one, actually, because I was able to use Regenerate and that one from the Armadillo event. I'm forgetting what it's called that heals you based on how much you
Sacrifice.
Hit. Sacrifice. Okay. So I was able to use those.
Yeah, it seems they took away like the lunar healing and... I don't. Did they also take away Guthix's Blessing and Ice Asylum? I didn't look into that too much.
I didn't build up enough adrenaline to use those, so I'm not sure. But given the fact that the other basic healing abilities can be used, I think it would be a fair extrapolation that the ultimate healing abilities can also be used since they're same system.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there. And is that an oversight, or is that intentional, is the question?
Well, based on this sentence here, I would say oversight.
I think that actually what they were looking for, I don't know if, again, haven't played it, but from what it sounds like, I'm wondering if somehow, like, if you were fighting someone, you could get your friend to somehow get in there and get matched with someone who wouldn't fight them or would just chill next to you and heal you while you fight some...
You can't interact with other players.
Well, maybe you could use the heal other spell. I don't know.
Oh, okay, maybe that... Okay, that might be something to test then.
I don't... Yeah,
it's an interesting theory,
but...
It's an interesting theory, but I don't think... Like you said, I don't think you can interact with any other players at all unless it's your target. I'm pretty sure if you try to do anything to another player, it says this is not your target or whatnot.
Okay.
But it does say healing spells and abilities, and if those aren't disabled, then it's definitely an oversight. I remember a forum post discussing this, but unfortunately it has faded from the forefront of my memory.
I think the real test for that would be to do the crystal, the healing
Ice
crystal.
Ice Asylum.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, that's what it is?
Yeah, that's it.
So did you test that, Shane?
No.
Okay, because that's the only other one that will heal others.
Yeah.
People that are not you. So, I mean, that would be interesting to
Most
see.
Most people are not me.
Both people are not me. That's very deep. The Excalibur and Enhanced Excalibur, Vampirism, or Vampirism Scrimshaw can no longer be taken into the arena. Okay, so that's on the same vein as the previous one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Soul Split, that can be used inside. What do you guys think of that?
Well, it's a prayer and not an ability / item / aura. I don't know how I feel about that because it requires a level. These other things, I mean, there might be a defense level associated with Excalibur. I don't know. I never use the thing. But the only thing I can kind of justify in Soul Split's kind of defense is the fact that it requires skill where these others don't necessarily, if we're talking about just the past items. I don't know. I guess that argument may not hold up if you include healing spells and abilities, however. I just feel like this doesn't seem like balance. It seems like arbitrary choosing.
That's the same thing I was getting as well from this, because I have 92 prayer, and that is expensive. Given today. So, I mean, what's to say everyone is going to be able to get something like that, right?
Indeed. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It really seems odd to include some of these and not others. I'd really love to hear an actual, like, explanation of the mechanics behind why they left some out and included other ones.
Yeah, okay. So we'll look into that for future reference, and we'll also test the ultimate healing abilities and see if that's the case, if they can heal others or if it's something that was forgotten. And finally, players can now enter the houses with summoned familiars.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, because everyone's going to bring their Steel Titan in, because obviously that's the best one, right?
Yeah, definitely. And again, why allow summoning familiars and block all these other methods when, I don't know, it just, again, it seems really arbitrary.
Yeah. I wonder if you could bring a unicorn, because they're so against healing. I wonder if you could bring a healing familiar like a unicorn and use its scrolls, and it would be fine with that. Because, again, that's sort of like Soul Split, because it's a level thing. I mean, you unlock it with a level, but I don't know. Again, it seems arbitrary.
Right now it sounds like we're trying to break the Fist of Guthix update. That's
yeah,
the last
it does.
5 minutes
game,
of sound of life.
Game Breaker title incoming.
Yeah,
yep.
There you go. But so that's that. And I want to just touch on one thing that I experienced, and I want to get your guys' thoughts on this. When I first went to test the update this week, I went in and was chasing someone around with the stone. Now, obviously, the idea of kiting someone around the houses, okay, you can use that as a strategy, but does it really make sense to have that as a strategy in RuneScape for PvP when you're dealing with such a low tick rate game?
Do not even get
the
me started.
Tick rate comes up on every podcast.
Well, then we share something in common. I am a huge proponent for the I'm going to say the fixing of the tick rate. We need to upgrade this game. And I understand the fact that it would probably take. I actually just had a long monologue recently on the fact that we need, and by we, I mean, you know, Jagex and the community, we need to band together and put the long term investment in to solve the game ticking problem. If it takes 5 years, 10 years, if we're going to compete with modern games, it's got to happen.
Yeah, and let me just say from a, you know, a game development standpoint, upgrading the tick rate of RuneScape would essentially upgrade what we have now as RuneScape 3 to RuneScape 4, because so many pieces of content would need to be rewritten. But
they probably need to write the entire engine.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that if we ever want PvP to be successful, given what we have in modern games like League of Legends, Dota, any other MMO, we're going to need
Twitch
a better
based
tick
combat.
Rate.
Like any fast Twitch-based combat, the human mind can react at 0.1 second, and the game is at 0.6 seconds. It's not a natural feeling, and it makes me really angry every time I'm bossing.
Yeah, and that's the primary reason I don't boss, is because I'm not going to be at the mercy of my internet connection or the tick rate. And if I want to do combat, I'll do combat somewhere else. But
yeah.
That just reminded me of that again with Fist of Guthix. And okay, so both my hands are taken now and I'm carrying the stone. Oh, we have Evolution of Combat. I can't use abilities. So what's the point of Fist of Guthix now? Holding the stone and Evolution of Combat. They designed one side of this game to take advantage of combat. The other side is stuck in legacy mode. That is the side that has you hold the stone. So,
well, again, legacy mode is an afterthought for everything.
Like, yeah, and I mean, make Fist of Guthix work with the Evolution of Combat on both sides. Granted, it works on the hunter side. Make the hunted also be able to use abilities while holding the damn stone.
You would think that would be included in the quality of life up
there. Yeah.
You could be a two-handed weapon of some sort.
And, I mean, after I had this experience, I logged out, and then I just went back for another check today to see if it was still alive, and yeah, it is. So, that was that. But, I don't know, that's just rubbed me the wrong way.
No, I think you have a completely valid argument and grievance there.
Yeah. All right, rewards. You guys are probably happy about these, I guess. New runecrafting gloves grant you double XP.
I think that's the biggest one here, at least in my mind, because number one, the whole Abyss runecrafting thing has become the thing to do now, and also Blood Runes because of... these spells coming up are rising in price, and so it'll be more profitable, plus XP. I don't know. I feel like if there's anything to go for in there, it's the blood gloves. That's just me.
But is it confirmed? Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, given my calculations, I think this would take blood rune crafting up to 48 XP per rune.
Which, how many can you craft an hour? Do you know, Shane?
Not off the top of my hand. Sorry. Okay.
Well, it's a lot. It's but XP.
With this, the demonic skull, and any bonus XP you might have, abyssal runecrafting is back up there.
That's what I wanted to kind of wonder here and kind of ask, is if it is confirmed that the abyssal skull, or whatever the heck that skull is that you take into the abyss, does that stacks. Stack?
Yeah. It's,
okay.
It stacks with
regular bonus XP, so I would assume it would stack with this as well.
Okay. Because, I mean, if this is double and that's 3.5, are we looking at like 5.5 or something? Or
it would be each one would add an extra 1.0 to it. So the demonic skulls at 4.5, or 3.5, sorry, add the blood runes, and that'll take it up to 4.5.
Okay. All right.
And that's then add bonus XP, and you'll get another 10.5 on top of that.
That's some tasty XP.
It is, and 200 tokens.
Yeah, but how long does it take to obtain 200 tokens would be my next question.
Longer than it takes you to craft 1,000 essence.
Oh, what? One?
Yeah.
What?
It only worked for 1,000 essence.
Worth it. Never mind.
And see, that's what I said. I said...
God.
For the amount of time you spend in Fistagothics chasing other people around, painful as it might be with combat and whatnot, I think you're better off just hunkering down and running through the abyss with the demonic skull.
That's like brawler gloves that take hours upon hours to get, and that's all you're looking for. I don't know. It sounds dumb.
Yeah. Well, if you want a cringe story, when I was getting 120 thieving, I destroyed so many brawler gloves.
No. I've never had any. Ever.
I got some magic brawling gloves within 5 minutes of first starting to thieve the elves when I got the level.
So it's just an elf thieving thing. I really need to get my thieving up.
I got from 99 to 120, I got about 5 or 6 pairs of brawling gloves. Goodness. And I destroyed any of the ones that I deemed that I wasn't going to train the skill because each one takes up a bank space and I was very low on bank space.
And that was
same thing
they brought
with
out
me.
The
I
one
don't need the magic one, so way it went.
Yeah, I was just dragging them out of my inventory and pressing Y.
All right, so I think we can assume then that the runecrafting gloves are, I mean, nice idea, but probably not worth it.
No. Make it 10,000 essence, and I'll go for them.
Yeah, or put them in the Thaler shop.
Yeah.
Yep, that would work too.
But then no one's going to play Fistagothics.
No one's going to play Fistagothics anyway at the rate they're going here. I mean, the rewards aren't even great, as we're finding out right now.
They'll do it on Spotlight.
Knows. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And then...
Once every 3 months.
Poor Fistagothics.
Anyways, herb gloves for Lantatomy, Dwarfweed, and Torstal, requiring 300 and 350 tokens for each. Work the same as any of the other herb gloves. 50% chance of any herb you receive giving you that herb, and they degrade to dust after 100 herbs received.
Yeah, if you're fighting aberrant specters, these sound pretty good.
Yeah. Though I don't know how many more herbs we need in the marketplace, though I say that maybe from a bit of a biased perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I bring in at least 5,000 to 8,000 herbs a month.
There you go.
Yeah, I agree. The market is a tad saturated.
Well, they'll get sucked up once bonus XP comes around all the
herbs. Oh yeah, that's the best part of this month.
I sold 10,000 dwarf weed right before bonus XP weekend was announced for like 3,000 gold less than what I could have sold them for, and I hate my life.
That's just how the ball bounces at some point. I don't know if you guys remember going back all the way to when regular essence was made into pure essence.
Vaguely.
And then the prices shot up. Well, our website co-owner, Mike, sold a huge stack of essence like 2 days before that happened. And if he hadn't, if he would have held on to it, he would have been very rich. But anyways, that's just an extra story on the missed market opportunities segment of RSP and the update.
Happens to everyone.
Fishing gloves, additional XP for every kind of fish caught, degrade to dust after, once again, 1,000 catches.
So, didn't they used to have shark gloves here, and they pretty much replaced them with monkfish, cavefish, and rocktail?
The shark gloves still exist, I think.
Okay, so these are just on top of the shark gloves. Mm-hmm. All right, fair enough.
Yeah, monkfish, cavefish, and rocktail. Once again, I mean, 300 tokens, fishing rocktail, worth it? I don't know.
It's a lot of tokens.
It is.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyways, we'll wrap this up by saying that melee tank gauntlets no longer available from Fistagothix, and they've been made Slayer drops and are freely tradable. So you can go pretty much anywhere and get these. So, for example, the rune gauntlets come from the Necroyals, and the dragons come from the Spiritual Mages.
Basically wherever their boots come from, so the gloves come also.
Oh,
I heard that they one of these are free to play now as well. One of these items that were made just droppable by monsters. I thought it was the gauntlets. I could be wrong about that though.
Could it be the coifs?
It might be. I'm going to have to look. I know it was dropped by monsters because there was an issue with the fact that, yeah, they were dropped by monsters and they were free to play, but none of the monsters were actually free to play. So free to play players couldn't actually get them unless they bought them from the GG, which was not the intention.
Oh, got to love those oversights.
I love it. Yeah, it was funny. It's a little funny side story.
All right. Dragon leather coifs now made in the crafting skill with green, blue, black, and royal dragon eyed.
It's a little freaking late.
God. Yeah, I know. My Iron Man thanks you, though.
Yeah.
I wanted, like, I couldn't. This is a long time ago, several years, maybe 5, 6 years ago. I just couldn't understand where these came from. I just knew that they existed. I just didn't know how to get them, so I just thought they were just some super rare item and
a legendary, never. Legendary coif.
I was just like, what the hell do I wear on my head? So that, yeah. Obviously now I know that the coifs were from Fistagothix, but I can craft them now, but I don't need them, so.
I just assumed they didn't exist, so you were one step ahead of me.
A little bit late, but as they say, better late than never. Druidic Mage gear now requires 35 defense, and the magic requirement has been removed. I guess they can do that since peers are no longer a thing, right?
Pretty much. Well, that's what Jagex wants us to think. They are trying their hardest to stomp out the peer community, it seems.
They don't exist.
I'm sure there's still a few listening to this, but
there are some, like, I know a 35 defense pure. It's they're strange pures now. They're not like pure strength pures like you used to see, like rune pures and barrows pures and stuff like that. They're kind of fringe, mostly skill based. Yeah, which I think is interesting, but
interesting is the
wonder
word
how
for
that
it.
Works out in the combat system for them.
Yeah, probably difficult.
Battle gear is now free-to-play magic power armor requiring 50 defense and magic requirement once again removed. That's good. I think we needed some power armor at the lower tiers.
Agreed. And I'm glad free-to-play is getting a little, you know, taste here as well.
And Dragon Slayer gloves now require 40 Slayer, though I think I might remember reading something like this in a patch note before, but I guess not. Anyways, that's the Fistagothics update. So we'll just do what we normally do here. Rating out of 5 and projected lifespan.
For me, 2, lifespan, a month, and with the exception being whenever it's on Spotlight.
I'd have to go and say about 2.5. If I don't know if you take decimal points there,
yep.
But
yeah.
And I would have to say the lifespan is going to be pretty much the end of the Spotlight and will resume during Spotlight, and that's pretty much it. I don't think people are going to be farming this for its rewards, if you could even call them that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. I'm going to go 3 as well and pretty much back up what you two fine individuals just said. All right. So, Togglescape realized in the RuneScape preferences.
I love that they went with the name Togglescape.
Well, no, they didn't do that. That's just my name for it. But the actual name here is Centralized Toggles.
They used that name on the live stream.
Okay.
So they fully recognize that
they know.
Name,
they're aware. They're self-aware.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I mean, it's definitely needed. You don't want to be running around to every little NPC, you know, to set options. It's good to have it all in one central place, and that's what RS3 was supposed to do. So this accomplishes that.
I completely agree. I was surprised that they didn't do this with the launch of the new interface system. I think it's great that it's simple to find. It's still a little complicated for newer players to understand what the heck's going on. I've made the allusion before, and I'll say it here as well, is the fact that when you open up the RuneScape, you know, game settings, it's like looking inside of a B-52 bomber cockpit. There's so many toggles and switches. It's like, what? I'm afraid I'm going to, like, launch a missile or something by accident. That being said, though, I think it is important to have accessibility for those options and maybe a, you know, 500-page manual on how to not break the game with it.
Yeah, and let me just say that UI design has never really been Jagex's forte, and they did improve with RS3, and this just takes it a step further. So,
indeed.
We commend them for that.
I do, yes, indeed.
All right, well, we're going to move on to the patch notes right now, so I'll start by asking you, Majbit, anything in the patch notes jumping into your attention?
As far as these past patch notes went, we had a ball reading them. We thought a lot of these things were fairly humorous. As far as the actual changes to the game, I didn't find anything that really jumped out at me too significantly. I can't really attest to anything that was like amazing. Most of it was like graphical corrections, from if I remember correctly, mm-hmm. which is always good. But you know, it's forgotten the second it leaves my mouth.
Yeah, and Colton, you touched on that earlier. You can share with the listeners your great
yes, everyone,
description.
Rejoice, psoriasis, plaque psoriasis specifically, and leprosy have been cured in-game, so no more worried about all your skin stuff. We've got all your skin tone improvements. The skin tone on the character's shoulder will now match the chosen skin tone while wearing constructor's garb. A skin tone issue on Helimos has been fixed, and all kinds of other skin tone issues. A skin tone issue on characters wearing an executioner cowl has been fixed. All kinds of skin diseases and dermatological ailments have been cured, so that's good. Also,
all right, and the avians?
Yeah. There was a certain large bird, which honestly should probably just be graphically redone because they're pretty old models, unless they just want to keep them and make them like one of those, what's the Black Knight?
Black Knight Titan.
Yes, thank you, Black Knight Titan. Make them one of those sort of just novelty old looking models. But one of the giant eagles apparently had something wrong with its eye, so it looks like they are looking to help with cataracts in the large avian species.
I believe
So,
I believe the scientific term for his condition was derp eye.
oh. That
I think I've
sounds.
heard that term before.
It's a very unfortunate condition, but it's genetic, and praise Guthix's corpse. He was cleansed of it via divine intervention.
All
Also,
right,
Kangos.
so now that we got the cosmetic stuff over, let me just tell you that spiders will no longer spawn underneath Araxi, Colton.
Oh my gosh. And I hope that they fix this with Araxor too, because like if you don't kill all the minions, if for people who haven't fought Araxor very much, if path one is open and you don't kill all the minions during the second phase of path one, then basically what happens is when Araxi comes down and you're in the final sort of little battle with the female instead of the male, basically, she'll spawn those baby spiders, and sometimes she would spawn them right under her, and so you'd basically have to run under her to drag along this little blow up, the little ball of fire that would explode the eggs, and it just made it a pain because you couldn't see them, and because they would obviously like clip, and so then the spiders would just, I don't know. It was annoying.
And didn't you get melee attacked if you ran underneath the Araxi?
Yes. Which is something that if you're doing range like I do, you're not praying against, so you get kind of hurt a little bit.
All right. Also, Fragmentation Shot and Slaughter no longer share a cooldown, but Frag Shot and Combust now do share a cooldown. Okay.
That's interesting.
Yeah, their
Why would their
abilities are
range?
different
So
types, so.
you can't. They're supposedly more correlated to each other than the other ones that previously shared a cooldown, and that was supposedly to keep people from switching armor sets and then using the equivalent of the different, triangle type. So, like, if you used,
Right.
the mage,
Okay.
that was supposedly what the purpose of that was. I'm purely parroting
Well,
information that I've heard, though.
Frag Shot
Fragshot is Fragshot and Combust are both basic abilities, and Slaughter
Yes.
is a threshold ability.
That's
But
right.
I
So
guess
this
the
does make sense in that regard then.
Interesting.
Bash is no longer classed as a stun ability, which, I mean, okay, because it does have a chance to stun you, but I guess there are other main stuns like what are they called? The what is it?
Don't
Can't come to
know.
my head right now.
I don't shield combat, Shay.
Are we talking stuns? I mean, the only stun
Yes,
that I can think
stuns.
of is I think it's destroy or assault, one
Oh
of those two.
yeah.
Just
It's destroy.
destroy, yeah. And
Yeah.
that's like literally the only one I know.
The asphyxiate, I think, is
There you
Yes,
go. That's another
asphyxiate.
one.
Yes, that is another stun. What's the
Yay.
range version? Rapid fire or something?
It's binding shot, I think.
Binding shot. Binding shot binds you. It doesn't stun you.
Oh, well, I don't know.
I know rapid fire has a chance to stun you. I don't know if it always stuns you. This is you can see how, adept I am at EOC combat.
None of us are absolute pros here, so.
That is true. We're all noobs.
Yay!
Anyways, many degradable equipment pieces also have been updated to display their remaining charge to one decimal point, so you can tell if it's 1.1% or 1.9%, so you can get that extra kill in before you go recharge your Dragors.
I think it's a
I'll
pretty
say that's
cool
a welcome
feature.
change. Yeah.
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 Because you don't want those weapons dying out in the middle of a task or a boss run, right?
Anyone who waits for like 1.9% to repair their weapon, though, is
Who
just
does
they
that?
living on the edge, man.
It's like driving past the E.
I never, like, back before Hydrix, you know, the Hydrix change, I would never let my Hydrix fall below 50%. Like, I'm that kind of person.
No, like, I am too.
I play it super safe.
Oh, okay, so I guess I'm living on the edge then, having my Drygorce at like 6% then, yeah?
Wow.
Oh, gosh. You live a dangerous life, my friend.
Well, I just don't have the funds to repair them, and I mean, I don't go on high-risk combat adventures anyway, so doesn't bother me.
Fair enough. You know, that makes sense. If you're not risking it, then you don't need to worry about it, I suppose.
Exactly. All right, folks, so there's the patch notes. Not too much in here this week, but as you can see, they did cure the skin conditions, which is always good, because you can't make a good first impression if your skin doesn't look good.
Indeed.
And this is the point where we would insert the advertisement for the skin cream. But
I was about to ask, you about to sell me some lotion, bro?
Olay,
yeah, we could do that.
It's lovely. Sorry, what was that, Colton? Aging cream. Oh, I don't know. I'm just going on.
All right. Anyways, a bit of an update about something we chatted about last week, and that is the Quest Point Master Cape. They have put out a version 2 of this development blog with finalized requirements. So some of the more controversial things, like the 3,000 Chompy kills and the Livid Farm, have been removed. But some rarish randomness things, such as the Dungeoneering journals, still do exist.
And Last Riders, which we can talk about that later, but yeah.
This is an intimidating cape, I have to say.
I want it, but I just don't know if I can do it. There's so much I have to do. I have to do temple trekking.
That's on my list. And, I mean, I think I got most of everything on here except for the Dungeoneering stuff and the God books.
Oh, the Dungeoneering stuff will take you some time then.
Yeah,
have no fear.
As with the Ascension Dungeon as well, Mascap Stone Fragments, that's done. So I think my progress will be pretty good compared to most. But
you don't have Last Riders, though, do you, Shane?
No.
Yeah. You should come and you should join me when I do my KBD kills. I'm already 400.
Yeah, we could do that. Yeah. We could do that.
Make it faster.
Adamant and Rune Dragon journals, okay, that'll have to be done as well. Elder Divination.
It takes a little while. Yeah.
But anyways, as you can see, it's not nearly as bad as it was the week before. It has been improved to a point which I would call acceptable, but there are still some questionable things on there. Mm-hmm. My biggest issue with the first round, which I'll say again, was the Livid Farm requirement. For me, as a farmer, Livid Farm is pure blasphemy.
Egregious.
I haven't done Livid Farm yet, and I'm not scared of it.
There's no reason to be scared of it. It's just
everyone I talk to says you're going to have like the worst time in the world doing Livid Farm. And I don't know. I don't know if I believe them.
It's like 40
it's not too
hours
bad once you have it figured out.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's like, I'm all about the grind. That's my favorite thing in RuneScape to do, is grind out things. Like, I don't feel like, I think people blow Livid Farm out of proportion. And I'm speaking in pure ignorance at the moment because I haven't done it. But I feel like it's blown out of proportion as far as the pain that people say they experience when going through it.
Yeah.
I do have a question, though, regarding this cape. Looking at all the requirements here, if you had to just ballpark a figure, how many hours in total do you think are here if you had to culminate all of the actual rewards and kind of put a quantitative figure on that?
Like, as in in-game hours?
Yeah, like you're in the game getting all these. Let's just already assume you have a max account.
Part of it is that, I mean, oh, you already have a max account? So
yeah,
let's just say,
because I think the majority of people who are going for this are probably already going to be max or close to max. Mm-hmm. So let's assume you have a max account, and let's just assume you have most of the quests done, and you're going for after quest stuff. So for the average high-level player, like, when this cape comes out, like, are we talking, you know, like 100 hours, 200 hours?
that's tough because the one thing, if you're saying maxed, I'm assuming 120 Dungeoneering because you're gonna need 119, mm-hmm. Because you need to get all of the regular journals. So that takes a long time, and those are all random. So you could, even on your road to 120, there's a high likelihood that you may be missing some journals. Like I'm 114 right now, and I'm missing several. Basically, I don't know. This is at
it's
least
gonna
a couple
be a big
hundred.
Cake. And yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be more grand in terms of appearance and having it than the max cape will be. Because
oh, yeah.
Let's remember, people don't do quests for lore. At least the vast majority of them mm-hmm. do not. So,
and you can't buy bonus XP for quests now, can you?
Exactly.
Oh, God. Don't give them ideas, Colton.
Oh, crap. Yeah. I'll keep my mouth shut. But, I mean, that is one way to look at it. I mean, I don't know if they could end up doing that one day. I would severely lose hope in the game if they were to sell a way around questing, but
we'll call it free pass tokens, now only 5 bonds.
If you did that, the quest community would riot.
Oh,
in
yeah.
our home world of World 66.
Yeah, I was about to say that is our home world. Oh goodness. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah,
well,
I don't know. It's a good cape, but still questions around it, and I mean it's
going to
be something
gonna be,
people go for.
Yeah, it's never going to be perfect as far as the as far as, you know, the requirements go.
Problem is that people want some RNG because they want some RNG, just not too much. It's definitely catch 22 because 1 in 10,000 is too much for the miscellaneous Dungeoneering journals. But you know, hey, Last Riders, it's the only lore drop from the King Black Dragon. It's 1 in 1,000. It may take a while, but it's more acceptable. So they want some RNG, but not too much RNG. So it's, you can't please everyone.
Yeah, and the thing I'm most happy about with this cape is that it's not going to be something you can just walk out and, you know, pick up the day it comes out. You're actually going to have to do some work for this, and you're actually going to have to care a bit about quests and what comes after quests, which to me is an excellent thing, because too many people, in my opinion, just do quests, you know, for the rewards and to say they're done. They don't immerse themselves enough in it, and they don't take away what they're supposed to. So I hope that this will shine a light on that and show people that this side of the game does exist.
Absolutely.
So, anyways, this is looking like it's heading towards development, so this is better than it was in the previous week. So with that being said, I'm going to direct everyone to Informer now, because Sirion from Clan Quest wrote a great article about the Master Quest Point cape and ultimately where it heads and its downfalls. And as the leader of Clan Quest, he has a unique perspective on this. So if you want to find that and more, just head on over to informer.rsbnb.com. And the link
nice
will also be
plug
in the show notes. You're catching on, Colton. You're becoming a second Earth, slowly but surely.
I had to throw it in there.
Okay. All right, so Death Lotus training. Any of you taking part in this?
Somewhat.
I'm very, very hesitant, and I'm generally cynical about these types of events. I know the underlying purpose is to try and trick me into buying rune coins and treasure hunter keys or whatever it is. They want my money is the bottom line here. And I feel like the likelihood of me being able to complete it without buying into the system is low enough that it doesn't warrant my attention, I guess.
Yeah. And one thing I noticed with most of the rewards that come from this are purely cosmetic based in addition to the XP that you get. So it's not like you're missing out on, you know, a great new weapon or anything like that.
I'm pretty cynical about this stuff typically as well, but I honestly think this is, and we could, there's a question regarding this later so I can expound upon it. But I think this is better than other promotions they've done, like the bonus chests and Prismania and stuff like that, where they just hand it out. So I think it's an improvement, but
it's a really interesting concept.
Yeah,
it's basically the road trip, except for Treasure Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the road trip only for people with money.
Yeah, that is a way to look at it, but it's baby steps. You gotta get them baby steps. So.
Of course, I know I can be harsh at times, but if I have to just look at the pure mechanics of this, they are quite clever.
Oh yeah, and anything to get people to look at Treasure Hunter, I think, is a clever thing from Jagex, because there's so many people that won't even open that up for the daily keys and whatnot.
Oh, they had me at free. They had me at free stuff. So you know.
Are you going to do this, right, Shane?
No, I'm not.
No? Okay.
Nope.
Sitting out.
Yep, that's right. But one thing I may not sit out on is the God Caps, which are now purchasable on the Jagex merchandising store.
Really?
You can get logos for Ceridoman, Armadyl, Zamorak, Zeros, Bandos, Saren, and the Godless.
You must have not looked at the prices yet, then.
How much are they?
Oh, dear. Let's see.
Merch store. Because
I would love to have one of these, but
Canadian $34.99.
Why are they all snapbacks?
Yeah, they are snapbacks as well, which is
unfortunate. That's a problem as well, then. Snapback.
Yeah, so it's not like a Velcro or a loop tie or anything like that, which, you know, the quality is probably a little lacking there. But to ship to America, at the very least, after shipping and all that, it's about $41 for one hat for me.
I'd rather get a shirt.
I know. I'd buy the hoodie for like 50 or 60 something instead.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm literally paying like half of a yearly VIP package for a hat. Nah, no thanks.
T-shirt costs less.
But just wait. Anyone who orders before the 10th will get a winning item in game. So there's going to be a cosmetic item you get for purchasing a hat. And
is
that's
it a
September
snapback?
10th, by the way.
Is it a snapback? Because God, if there are snapbacks in the game, kill me.
It doesn't say what it's going to be.
Yeah, all it says is it's going to be themed after whichever hat sells the most. So, Zeros.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it will be Zeros. Or maybe the Godless. A lot of
that,
people.
Yeah, yeah. That was my other thing. You know, you know what? They say, oh, look, the Godless dominated the last world event, but Zeros wasn't an option.
Yeah, good point.
There you go. So, yeah. And that's the same conclusion that we came to.
Hmm.
Should be interesting.
Would still like this hat. I would be willing to pay about $15.99 for this hat. So contact me, Jagex. We'll work something out.
Even though you get an in-game item?
You know, the in-game item was actually slightly tantalizing to me. The fact that they're not showing me what it is, though, there's a level of uncertainty there. Like, I don't want to drop that amount of money and then end up, like you said, like Colton just said, getting like a stupid snapback from a character that's A, going to match absolutely nothing that I wear, and also just make me look like an even gianter. Yeah, like an even gianter nerd than I already am. Not that there's anything wrong with that, of course. But
I'm just imagining that D-bag meme, the character around with
like the Justin Bieber hat. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh boy.
Hopefully that's not what happens. I trust Jagex enough to assume that's not it.
I don't. Have you been watching their live streams?
They won't
lately?
Do that.
It's a good point, but I hope. I have hope in humanity.
I envy you.
All right. Well, I guess if you got some money to throw around, there's something you can purchase this week. But time for the behind-the-scenes video.
Woo.
For The Light Within. You know, I still want to say Within the Light when I see that, but it's The Light Within.
Yeah, I've made that mistake countless times already, so don't feel bad.
Yeah. So they say the quest is coming in 2 weeks on this video, but on the podcast they said on the 17th. So do we know which day it is?
it got delayed. It was officially announced, I believe, today that they will be delaying it another week, which, I mean, if it's...
Are you really ruining my dreams right now?
I'm very sad, but they
yeah, we are too.
But if it prevents bugs from coming into the game, I guess it's for the better, but still.
Of course, but yeah, I was really hyped, and I don't get hyped for quests very often, but I was really excited to do this quest on Monday.
Yeah, I was pretty psyched as well, but...
Mm. Well, I mean, anytime there's a bug in a quest, it severely, you know, degrades the experience, and when it's something that's going to be as lore intensive as I'm thinking this is going to be, we do not want any bugs involved in this quest. So
we just don't want a birthright of the dwarves.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. We don't want a repeat of that.
But I will say that this also gives Earth another week to get 80 divination.
Yeah, yeah. Anyone who's been slacking on getting the requirements, you have your prayers have been answered.
Is he still below 80?
Yeah, he's still 78. Needs some more drugs to take that along.
Send some his way.
I loved divination, man. I banged that out in 1 month, like 14
it's
hours
relaxing.
A day.
It is. It is. I say treat divination as fishing, except
yeah,
the
it's
bank
air
is
fishing.
Only a few steps away.
Yeah, it's like it's better than fishing. Like, all right, I have when divination first came out, I was actually really angry. Just to quote what I said, I was like, this is just literally air fishing. But then I slowly came to love it. Maybe,
yeah,
probably because I love fishing, though.
That helps.
Anyways, I'd suggest everybody watch this behind-the-scenes video. It's quite amusing to see Mod Raven at work once again.
He scares me.
Yeah, I like him, though. Well, I would definitely, like, watch a movie with him or something.
Oh, yeah, he could play lots of parts. I mean, he was playing this horse and then had the horse, cleaning his face or something after it. But
he's an interesting character.
He is.
It's funny because, I don't know, in the real world, people must look at him and think, like, oh, this guy is, like, eating out of dumpsters when he really is, like, a famous, like, game developer. Because he just looks crazy. He looks crazy bonkers. But he's really like a freaking genius. And that's what I love about him.
Yeah, and we had a good gif of him last week from the end of the behind the scenes video. So
I never got to see that. Was that in the show notes?
Yeah, it's in the show notes. You can find it at update.rsbnb.com.
Nice plug.
All right. Also, the podcast this week is on Within the Light again. Or The Light Within, sorry.
I want to do Within the Light again.
Full screen for some reason. But yeah, give that a listen to. They run through all the spells and prayers, which we've talked about before. Also in the dev Q&A, got a video preview of them. So, looking good. Yes, I can just ask you guys here. Which one are you looking forward to the most?
The Saren spells and prayers?
Yeah. Which one?
Crystallize. That's easy.
Oh, yeah. All right. I agree with you 100%, but if I had to pick a second one just so we're different, I would also really am looking forward to teamwork. The teamwork prayer looks really cool.
Teamwork?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
For every chained person, you get a certain amount of like buff and reflect chance, and I think that's just a really cool idea and concept. I'll probably never use it, but I think it's a cool idea and concept.
All right, I'm most looking forward to, unsurprisingly, the skip growth one for farming.
Really? Do you feel like that's worth it as far as like the amount of time that it skips?
Well,
you can only do it once per day.
Here's the thing. With that, it's per patch. So in theory, you could take a magic tree down by, I believe, about 2.5 hours. So it is worth it in that regard. That
so are you looking to add the time up cumulatively in that sense in order to gain, like, basically a free growth cycle over time, like a free tree over time? Because unless you're playing with, like, bot-like precision, how would you take advantage of those hours?
Do not underestimate the Shane.
Yeah, basically. Well, yeah,
please enlighten me.
Basically, as it is, if you time things out precisely, you can log in a couple of minutes or a couple of seconds before your tree grows, and then you can get the next ones in right away and be done with it and on to the next run. So the idea that I had with this is that you can take the skip growth spell, and, I mean, if you get your timings right, and I haven't looked into the exact timings for this, but with a good number of the lower level trees, it'll mean you're going to be able to fit another one in.
In the same day.
In the same day.
Okay. All right. That's good to know, yeah. Because I wasn't really clear on if it was going to actually benefit it, or if you were going to end up, like, for instance, if you were to do it and then fall asleep and then, you know, the tree grows to full cycle.
Yeah, there'd be no point in that then.
Exactly, because then you've lost the window of opportunity there. That's what I couldn't get past in my brain. But the way you're explaining it, that there's... Okay, it makes sense now.
Yeah, and I mean, if I'm on a day where, you know, I have control over my schedule and whatnot, I will set timers for my herb runs so that every hour and a half and exactly when it goes in, plus or minus a few minutes, I'm hitting the herb runs at the exact same time that I'm supposed to.
Yeah, so that is one of my favorite features of my new keyboard. It's got a built-in timer that launches a sound as soon as it's time for an herb run.
How long exactly are herb runs? I've heard anything from 80 to 90 minutes. Can one of you enlighten me?
And see, that's the thing with that. The herbs work in cycles of 20 minutes, and there's four of those cycles. So in theory, you can get it down to a minimum of 80 minutes, but
it has to do with when the cycle is running, right?
Yes, that's right. So if you time your cycle to be a little bit off, you could have it be as much as 85 or 87 minutes, for example. So that's why that's the case, and it's a good reason to use a timer for that.
Yeah, which is
why everyone wanted the herb farming timer.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, it would be a huge help, whether or not the farming timer will ever make it into the game is another story. I really hope it does. But there are farming timers that you could find out there that try to simulate that, you know, experience. But without having access to the actual ticks in the game, it's not really possible to get a perfect, precise timer. And it can be really frustrating. That's why people generally who are using a timer just set it to 90 minutes to just as a safety precaution, so you're not too early, or you end up farming like half of your run and then find out halfway through, oh crap, the rest of these aren't done and I have my aura active, and then, you know, blah 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 blah.
Yeah, and I mean, it's something I'm going to build. I was waiting to see what Jagex would come up with, but it's something I do want to build eventually.
Farming timer would be... Alt-1 has a farming timer that works fairly well, but it's not very user-friendly. I would love to see a user-friendly farming timer.
And that's what I do.
You use Alt-1?
No. I mean, I enjoy making things user-friendly that are not user-friendly, and that's why I said I'm going to build a farming timer.
You should totally do that.
Well, some form, yeah, but it will get built eventually.
I would so use it. That would be awesome.
Me too. Me too. That would be fantastic.
Anyways, other one, farming aside, that I'm interested in is the one that shares life points and food.
Ah, yes. That's another interesting one.
Soul Link.
Soul Link, yes, thank you. I knew the word soul was it.
Yeah.
I was intrigued by that one, and I was wondering, obviously, it's probably not going to be activated with any other prayer that puts up a, you know, an icon above your head like Soul Split or anything. And I'm wondering, in what scenarios, I'm assuming large group scenarios only, preferably raids and Virago, I'm guessing, or Rise of the Six, is the only scenario where that's going to make sense versus using Soul Split or a Protect From prayer. Does that sound valid, or can anyone think of a scenario where else it might be used? Because I'm, like I said, definitely not, you know, the highest PVMer out there. And these spells really intrigue me, but I fail to see the value in a lot of these, and I think a lot of it is just inexperience on my behalf.
I'm the same way.
Here's the way Soul Link will be useful is, you know, tanks use tank armor, so therefore they have a higher life point pool, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say you have something that isn't as a phase where the tank needs to be actively engaged in combat, but then that slows down for a bit. In the calming down, slow down phase, the tank can potentially link with someone else who might be having maybe a bit of a life point problem and, you know, buff them up that way in terms of their life point. At least that's the way I see Soul Link being used. Now, as to where you would take that, I don't know. Maybe some of the God Wars stuff, if you're trying to get lower level players to do God Wars, because, I mean, barrier to entry, God War Dungeon, that used to be a big problem for us, was getting people who might have a food deficiency or something like that to stay alive. So you can have a skilled tank at Bandos or something, and then have them also share life points. So that was the idea I had. So we'll have to wait and see how this all works and what the numbers are like, because obviously we haven't seen numbers yet, and it's really premature to comment on anything without numbers.
I would agree.
So, all right. Anything else RS related before we move on to the questions this week?
I think I'm satiated.
Mm-hmm. All right. So the first one is an audio question from the RR Man.
You're listening to RSBNB Update Questions for 8/15/2015. I'm your host, the RR Man, with over 11 years of RuneScape experience. On today's show, episode 37, podcast Assemble. Hey, Scapers. All right, let's bend this over and get right into it. First question, starting with the basics, what's the one defining moment that got you into podcasting? And if it follows on, what was the first podcast you ever listened to? Question 2. Let the battle continue. Which skill, in your personal opinion, would you like to see improved / reworked? Smithing or farming? Lastly, the question that's on everybody's mind, or just myself, because I like to cause shit. Which is better, Mac or PC? Peace out, guys. Oh, I mean, happy scaping.
I love it. I love it.
All right, so let's let Majbit take the first answer here to the RR Man.
All right, so defining moment that got me into podcasting. That is a very hard and deep question to kind of really think about. I have to kind of really look back. I mean, I have loved podcasting ever since I really kind of got into and kind of discovered it, really, back in, I would say, probably around 2004, 2005, and it revolutionized the way I kind of took in information, and I really wanted to become a part of it because I loved kind of the spread of information. I'm a huge infophile. I love taking in information, spreading information, and when I found that there was this medium that anyone could plug into and just distribute their own information and bring in new information for themselves, I was just kind of like, wow, this is the future right here, and I want to be a part of it. And then a few years later, I kind of decided that it was RuneScape was going to be what I was going to, try to disseminate at the very least. And that's kind of how I started the show, was just I wanted to help the community. So that's what got me into podcasting mainly, was A, my want to help people, and B, my love for the ability to kind of share information and keep information open and available. You want me to continue on with all these questions?
What's the first podcast you ever listened to?
The first podcast I ever listened to, I believe, and I have to kind of split between two because I can't remember exactly, because it was over 10 years ago. I would probably say it was Mysterious Universe. And that was my favorite podcast for quite some time. Another one was Anarchy X back in the day. They no longer podcast. Those were probably the first two I ever listened to. And then it really branched out really quick from there, though. Like, I heard my first podcast, and then within that same day, I was attached to like 10 other ones. So, but I believe MU was the first one that I ever listened. I still listen to them to this day. They're great. Let's see. And then he asks, what skill would you like to see improved, farming or smithing? They both really need a rework, but being a farming fanboy, I would have to go with farming. You know, greenhouse for the win, please. We need a farming rework. Not only am I a huge fan of farming in the game, but I'm also a huge fan of Harvest Moon, the world's greatest farming simulator.
Oh, boy.
So
I haven't played that yet.
Really? You've never played Harvest Moon? I've been playing Harvest Moon since I was like 8. Super Nintendo, the way back. Oh, they are great games. If you like simulation games and you like farming, you got to play some Harvest Moon. It's a great experience. I want to see more mechanics like in Harvest Moon be translated into the RuneScape world. Then, I mean, farming will be perfect. So I have to go with farming, even though smithing is horribly neglected in this game. And, I mean, as far as Mac or PC goes, I mean, I'm a PC engineer. Like, that's what I do for a living is information security systems with PCs. If somebody tells me they have a Mac, I generally, I'm sorry. I can't help
well,
you.
Well, I got to put this out there then that this podcast is being recorded on a Mac right now.
That's fine. That's
and it
fine.
Has been since day one.
I fix Macs, but I do it very begrudgingly because their parts are overpriced and their operating system is just it's too user friendly. It's too user friendly.
See, that's the thing. That's what makes the Macintosh a good thing for most people is the operating system. Not only the operating system, but all the great applications that come with the operating systems and that third-party developers provide. Third-party developer ecosystem on Windows is garbage.
Absolutely. You are correct. And that's because of the curation level that Apple performs. And again, you pay a crazy premium to live in Apple's walled garden, where in the PC world, it's the wild, wild west. Anything goes, and you can tweak everything any way you want, and no one can say anywise because you're not locked inside some little paradigm that some egomaniac has created for you.
And see, that's the thing. Also why I like OS X and the Apple ecosystem is because I write code for Airbnb and other things, and I don't want other people messing around with it. So I see what Apple is doing, and I appreciate that level of control that they put into their operating systems and hardware.
There is definitely no hiding the fact that Apple is 100% in the forefront of security as far as their down to the very hardware level in their software. Like they do it the best. Like even if you talk to law enforcement or anything, again, I'm information security, and generally when we're dealing with Apple products, that is if you have an encrypted Apple product and you have a problem with it as far as data retrieval goes, your hands are thrown up in the air. It's just nothing we can do.
It's not happening.
There's no backdoor. There's no hackable way to get around it. They do it tight and secure, at least at this current day.
That's what I also say to people when they're saying, what phone should I get? I'll say, are you worried about law enforcement agencies or what Google might be doing for you? And if the answer is yes, then I say, well, you should be looking at iOS or Apple in terms of the software that you use.
We also have to keep in mind that Apple has had plenty of leaks with iCloud and whatnot. So, I mean, nothing is absolutely perfect. And I mean, if you're worried about law enforcement getting into your devices, then you have a bigger problem. And maybe you should be using something like Redfone or something along those lines. Yep. But yeah,
my view, if you have nothing to hide, what do you have to worry about, right? So
in that scenario, you might as well go with Google then, because if you have nothing to hide, because they for sure will take all your data. But I find that their services overall are more robust than Apple's. And, I think that also might be a personal opinion.
Yeah, and that also comes from, Apple wanting to tailor to the casual user, user who doesn't want to think about all that extra stuff. So that's where that comes from. And I completely get that and what you're saying as well. So
I think I think that we can all work.
They all work for what they're designed to do.
Exactly. So. I think you're more likely to see PC on the enterprise side, and I think you're more likely to see Apple on the casual user slash developer slash creator side of things.
Oh yeah, and that's another reason I love OS X is because I get the Unix operating system without the hassle of Linux.
See, I love Linux, and it's funny because when you're dealing with the inner workings of a Mac, you're dealing with a Unix shell basically, and for some reason I still can't get over the fact that it's covered in Mac. I just like. You can't put diamonds in a turd and call it,
a bracelet. What I tell people is if you're having trouble with an Apple computer and you like adapting to it coming from Windows, you just need to let go and let it drive you. It's the car that drives itself.
I hesitate to make some controversial statements as far as a reply to that goes, but letting go and just letting Apple take over is just, I don't know. I don't know if I'm willing to do that. I feel like, especially from someone like yourself who's definitely has a creative mind, why would you want to be constrained by that? And again, I'm more trying to facilitate a healthy argument than, these are not directed as criticisms in any way. I'm curious.
Cast off the shackles, man.
The thing is,
I've not had any problems for the last 7 or 8 years that I've been using OS X full time. And if there is a problem with an application on the Apple side, I write my own application to solve that problem.
Fair enough. I have to definitely take your side on
it as well.
Yeah, I have to take your side easily on the fact that when you basically need a freaking PhD to keep a Windows machine running healthy on a regular basis, and that's really unacceptable. But I don't know. I love the granularity. I love being able to go down into the registry and tweak every tiny little thing about what's happening in my computer. And I don't know. They both serve their purpose.
You can do that on OS X as well. And there was a time where the Mac shell and whatnot was more skinnable than the Windows shell. So
fair enough.
You just need to know where the buttons are to push, and they can be pushed. So
I suppose part of my argument is probably out of ignorance, and I used to do technical support for an antivirus company, and we supported a lot of Mac computers, and it was really amazing to see what people would do unexpectedly with Macs along the lines of, it's amazing to know how many schools and colleges out there that actually use OS server and Open Directory opposed to, like a Windows Server and Active Directory. It was kind of was jarring to me at first.
Oh, yeah, they exist. But all right, I think that's enough of Mac versus PC here because, we have lots of other questions to talk about. So, Colton, defining moment, and what was the first podcast you ever listened to?
Okay, so I'm the sort of the odd man out here because I don't really have a defining moment because I am just a guest host here. So my defining moment was Shane invited me onto the show and to join the Informer team. So I guess that's a defining moment. The first podcast I ever listened to, and this is going to sound extremely cheesy, but it was RSVNV Update. I actually got into podcasting extremely late and everything. It took me a long time to even know that they were a thing because it's not like I was extremely ear to the ground with that kind of stuff. And the only impetus I had for seeking out such a source was back when I came back to the game after my hiatus and searching for information. And I just stumbled upon it, and ever since then, I've branched out into all sorts of podcasts. So that was the origin, as it were. And the skill I would this is funny, because I, unless Majbit has some previous history I don't know about, I'm the only one to have been raised on a farm and yet hate farming. So Smithing all the way for me. We need the tiers reworked. We just need everything reworked. So, smithing. And I'm going to keep this last part short and simple because I am not as technically adept as these two are. So, I have an Apple phone, but I would never buy a Macintosh computer just because it's not what I'm... I just like the PC. I just do. So
it'll come around stubborn. One day.
Maybe.
Tell them to drop the price like $1,000, and maybe.
I think that's the main reason. I am still a college student.
All right.
Shane?
Well, my defining moment for podcasting, that's a hard thing to quantify since I've been doing this for so long. I mean, it's all a blur going back these many years, so I can't say there was a defining moment as to when we realized we could make this work. I guess it would probably be somewhere through our first year. Because the first episodes were rough and it took a while for us to get the format down and everything. But once we did, it just became like a well-worn glove, and I still enjoy doing this. So probably somewhere through the first year. Yeah. 530.
Right. That doesn't lie, man. That's a big number.
And the first podcast I ever listened to would have been This Week in Tech from Twit. Back in April of 2005.
Leo Laporte is my idol.
Oh, yeah, me too. There you go. That's good. And lots of stuff on that network is great. Still listen to Security Now weekly there. But other ones, it's more based on the content and what's going on in the tech world. So, depends. Mm.
Absolutely.
As for skill, I would have to say smithing as well, mainly because of what Colton said, tiers and whatnot. Smithing is just absolutely useless right now, maybe until we get invention, but more so because I don't want them to change the way farming works, because I think right now farming is a unique skill in the game. There's nothing remotely like it, so I don't see any reason why we need to change away from that.
I will gracefully accept the fact that I am on the minority end here, and that's fine. I think both of your points are very valid, and I agree that smithing does definitely need love, and it is very broken at the moment. I'm just a huge farming fanboy.
I've never played Harvest Moon, so...
You should.
We wanted
go get
the
it.
Greenhouse to win.
If this is, oh yeah, I think everyone did, except I don't, somehow it's still lost, but I mean, if this has anything to say, Harvest, yeah, it really is. I don't trust Power of the Players anymore. This, we need some, like,
it's
conspiracy
all
RuneScape.
Rigged. It's rigged.
But if this speaks to anything, Harvest Moon for Super Nintendo to this day still goes for $60. So it's a good game.
Wow. All right. Thank you, RR Man. That was a very interesting intro that you did.
We love you.
Nice mashup there. Thank you for the question. All right. The next one is from Drazu from Clan Quest. I will read this essay of a question now. Hi, hosts. If Jagex were to make an announcement that they were going to release quest content weekly by breaking up large content similar to the most recent quests, which have been large, sweeping content, usually associated with the Six Age story, how do you feel about the game community would react? The Six Age storyline is fairly short within the game time, but the real-world time between quests is months or years. If they took a Grandmaster quest and split it into 8 intermediate quests with high requirements, wouldn't that be better for gameplay? Also, is there any negative consequence to making content additions within the game associated with a new quest? Much of the content released recently has been ninja fixes, but were released as main content. What if the Slayer Belt had accompanied a Smoking Kills too? Even if the quest were only 3 minutes of content, all new content in the game could be introduced with a short tutorial which would serve as a quest. a lot of content was released this way in the past, but Jagex has developed a mentality where quests must be huge, and I feel they have skirted from the smaller quests as content releases because of this. Thanks for your thoughts. Sincerely, Drezu.
This sounds a lot like my Informer article from July. And I agree with him and yet disagree. With regards to breaking up a massive quest like that, I just feel like it would make it... the story wouldn't flow as well. Like, imagine if you were playing The World Wakes and you get to the automatons fight and you finish killing your automatons and then boom, you're cut off for the next, even if it's just a month. And then next month you get to fight Kriara and then you're cut off again. It makes it choppy. And it's difficult to follow the story, and it doesn't flow as organically as a big quest. As much of a proponent for smaller quests as I am, I'm against chopping them up just for the sake of having more quests, because I feel like that's a cop-out. With regards to actually using quests as content releasers, I've never looked at them like that. I've always... looked at quests should always, in my opinion, be the main reason for the update. The reward should never be the main reason. We shouldn't just release a Smoking Kills 2 because there's a Slayer belt, so why not? I feel like that's a little bit I just don't agree with that sort of mentality personally. I don't know.
All right. I'm going to kind of agree with you in that, you know, if you chop up a Grandmaster quest like The World Wakes, it has the effect of making it like a network broadcast TV series where you want to binge watch the entire thing, but oh, you're waiting week to week, except this is month to month. So I'm with you that I think that that wouldn't be a smart thing to do. But on the other hand, I think that they could do this with a different kind of quest story building, so to speak, in that you build the story to be released in chunks, mainly, say, every 2 weeks, for example, because in Star Trek Online, they've had great success with this in the past. They would release what's called a featured episode, and for the span of 1 month, each week we would get a new featured episode, and this would advance a single storyline. So Jagex could do something like that, except the storyline would actually have to be built to be released over every other week or every week instead of just chopping up an existing storyline.
So my main issue here with chopping quests up and calling it more content, if you take, for instance, a carrot and chop it up into pieces, do you consider yourself to have more carrots or just pieces of said carrot? It's not creating more content. It's disjointing the content that's already been created. And as both of you have already kind of already established, there's a flow in the current storyline that has been created to work that way. Now, it is very well possible that the storyline could be reworked, as you were saying, to fit into quote-unquote episodes. That's a complete possibility. Then it just comes down to, do people want one big epic adventure, or do they want a miniseries? Do they want an ongoing saga that lasts for, you know, a month? But isn't that what, like, a world event is? Like, when are we leaving the... when are we, you know, entering the realm of world event and leaving the realm of questing behind? I don't know. I just think that if you're going to do something like that, it almost falls into a different category of quest. It's not your typical kind of quest. I feel like that would be...
that's right.
Like a special...
like a special, like Recipe for Disaster. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. That I would consider...
And see,
go ahead.
The distinction between world event and quest is that world event, everyone is involved, whereas quest, it's just you going on this storyline.
Yes, yes, that's very true. But a lot of quests in of themselves act like they impact the entire world and that, you know, everyone is involved in it. And I know that's, you know, obviously just for the effect and the immersion. but more so along the points that just the fact that that type of event should have its own kind of class that falls under the umbrella category of quest, but I wouldn't consider that your typical quest. Although I would love to see something like that. I think that that could totally work in, you know, the environment that we have going on right now. I would love for them to do something like that. And as far as quests for content releasers, I have possibly a contrary opinion to that. In just the sense that I think it's nice to have little introductions. I would say more so mini quests than actual quests. Like, they don't necessarily have to show in your quest log, but little kind of like bits of lore that explain what happened, almost like a retcon sometimes is needed for certain things when they appear in the game. Like, I feel like it's not necessarily a bad thing to kind of explain why this item just mysteriously poofed into existence.
Yeah, I would honestly totally be fine with having it more of a mini quest. And to clarify, I am totally all for small quests. It's just that the content releasing thing being the main point for the update didn't feel right to me. But I would agree that it is nice to have at least a little bit of content to ease in something that either drastically shakes up what's happened before or adds something completely new. I would agree on that point.
If you're dealing with a quest, whether it be small, medium, large, extra large, grandmaster, whatever, the storyline should come first, always. When you're dealing with a mini quest, however, I think the goal of a mini quest is to introduce content. And I think that's the differentiation there that it really needs to kind of, you know, be brought to the forefront here.
Well said.
Yeah, and I think we really could go with a mini quest for new pieces of content. Slayer Belt doesn't necessarily need to be a full-blown smoking kills, but just look at some of the successful content introductions in the past, like Rune Mysteries for runecrafting, or Druidic Ritual for herblore.
Good old wolf whistle.
There you go, that too. So, it's certainly possible to do something like that, and I have a feeling that if Jagex was more focused on the questing aspect, or the mental perspective of from a questing player, so to speak, I think that would be a reason we would see more of this. And I'm going to hope that in 2016 we might go down this path, seeing as though Mod Osborne had said that he is going to have a well planned out direction for the year.
I do like the approach that he took with, like, all the probing surveys before the year actually starts. I think that's a really smart idea.
Yeah, and it's a lot better than deciding your year based on player power or rune labs and just get a mishmash of everything. And
or just spinning a wheel.
Yeah,
sometimes,
there you go.
Sometimes it feels like that's how they do it.
Anyways, thank you, Draz. Next one would be from Sunset Fish. Colton, give that a read.
This question from Sunset Fish reads, do you find it easier or harder to make and keep friends in RuneScape now than you did in the past? In my first 7 years of playing, I've made about 200 friends. In the last 2 years, I've made 3. Maybe it's just me being more antisocial. Maybe I'm less immune to your childish bull expletive, JG.
Hmm.
All right.
Who's going first?
I will. You know, it's a really interesting question about the community, because I think the community has changed from, you know, your first 7 years to what is ultimately the last 2 years, because everyone is focused on getting those levels as fast as they can now, so that's one side of the coin. And for me, in terms of people I meet, I'll, you know, add them to my friends list, see them, chat with them for a bit wherever we might be, and then 3 weeks later, don't see them online, and then, oh, they come back online in 4 months. So I don't know if that's just the people I run into, but that's been my experience recently, is that people don't seem to be sticking around for that long, who I add.
It's an interesting observation you just made there, and I think that that is a kind of a testament to the type of gaming community that kind of exists nowadays, with casual gaming being more and more of a thing. You know, the average people who played MMORPGs 7 years ago versus who play them these days are a completely different audience. MMORPGs were was a very niche thing back in the day. You were almost considered, you know, kind of outside the social norm if you played, you know. Yeah, exactly. Whereas today it's kind of accepted, and a lot of people even make their living off of, you know, these types of things, where it's become part of society. So, you know, we're living in a very different world. As far as the amount of friends that I made back in the day, I think it's not the amount, but more so the quality. I think I made more quality friends back in the days, but not to say that I don't these days. However, I just feel like the community was closer together back in the early days when, you know, we didn't have the Grand Exchange and the forums were not really a huge thing. Reddit didn't exist. Twitter didn't exist. Twitch didn't exist. YouTube did not exist. You know, the community we had tip.it, and pretty much that was it. So, you know, we really had to help each other out, and it was completely common to stand around midway through a quest and just yell out, you know, it's over and over, just spamming, has anyone figured out this puzzle? Has anyone figured out where does this key go? Until somebody was like, hey, I'm trying to figure this out too. Want to team up? And then bam, you made yourself a new friend. You both went through hell together and you made a bond. You don't see that these days because of YouTube videos and guide websites and podcasts and things like that. They kind of, you know, take the mystery out of it.
And plus, let's also remember that I can't even remember the last time we had a non-instanced quest that you could work
That's
on with other
people.
That's
very true. Where you're, you know, it's like, oh, you want to do this quest with me? And then you find out that like 80% of the quest is instanced and you can't even see the other person. Yeah, that's extremely common now as well. And also being in the unique situation that we're in, I mean, I am, you know, unsolicitedly PM'd on a daily basis if I log in. And I always keep my friends chat on public because I love it. I love hearing from people. But, you know, it's a very different scenario for me than it ever was, being kind of an open and public figure. You know, I probably on a weekly basis make 10 to 15, you know, new friends and have to kind of manage my friends list based off of that. So it can be really hard for me to kind of have a meaningful friendship when I'm constantly trying to, you know, talk to so many people at once. Oh, listen to me, I'm so famous. Sorry. I don't mean to.
But he's flocking the
Well,
page,
let me just say that. Let me just say that I do get those messages as well.
Yeah, I brought it up purely because obviously we're on a podcast right now. We deal with the RuneScape audience, so I mean it's a different scenario for people who throw themselves out there than for the average, you know, the average individual who doesn't want to do something like that and is a private person. But again, alluding back to the days, you know, the days of long ago, where again teamwork was a thing that got you through the game. Nowadays, it's like I got RuneScape on one monitor, I got YouTube on the other monitor, and I got public and private chat off. It's like that seems to be the average sentiment for people, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's right.
I will leave it there.
I have a different opinion, and I guess I have a different perspective, because although I did start almost 10 years ago, it's been different for me, because when I started, I was the most inept of inept players, and I had no freaking clue that people even like congregated somewhere and that there was a community. Like,
you thought everyone was an NPC, right?
I wasn't that stupid, but I trained at Hobgoblins until 60 attack, and that took forever, so that was a dumb idea. But regardless, the only site I knew about was RuneHQ, and the only thing I did there was I looked for trading prices, and that's all I used it for. And so I didn't really know a sense of community at that point. My extent of friendship came through private message. I had no clue who these people were, and when I came back, I have no clue who the heck this is. the only people I remembered were the people who I knew in real life and had actual interpersonal connections with that I could relate to. So personally, in my first 6-7 years of playing, I didn't really make any good quality friends, to be real honest. And in the last few years, because of the availability, and first of all, I'm not a complete freaking idiot, so I know where to find people, first of all. And second of all, we now have different platforms to get in contact with people than we did back then, and it's easier to maintain a contact. You're not just talking in-game. I mean, back then you could use like an instant messaging system, but I don't know. I never asked for that sort of details online because that was still sort of, I don't know. You didn't do that.
Scary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Stranger danger.
Precisely.
There you go.
And so personally, I feel like even though a lot of the community is very antisocial and they like to live in their little box, I think there are those out there, and you just have to find them, that that aren't that way. And because personally, if I'm playing RS, like right now, I don't even have RS open because I can't focus on it. Because when I play RuneScape, I like to be involved in the game, and it may be a strange thing in this day and age, but it's, I don't know, that's just how I play. So personally, I have had the opposite experience in that I've honestly made more friends that I'm in contact with and I could actually talk to now than I did in those first 6-7 years of playing. So that's from a personal standpoint.
Hmm. All right. Well, I guess then to sum this up is then that, yeah, I mean, we can say that the community has changed and the way we play RuneScape has changed. But given that, there are still people out there who care and are nice to everyone. It's just a matter of finding them. And I'd like to think we're a good conduit of that, especially our clan quest. If you're interested in questing, mm-hmm. that is the clan to be a part of. Even if you're interested in lore, I'd highly recommend that you join. So that's Clan Quest. If you need a clan, let me know and I'll get you the info for it. But you've taken a good step, and we like our community, and we are so happy that you sent this question in about this, because I think it's something that everybody has thought of at one point or another, right?
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Has anyone here ever actually followed through with the RuneScape friendship and actually met up with anyone in real life?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Same. Yes. So have I.
Yeah,
so have I.
Twice, actually. Oops. Sorry about that. I got a little excited there with my glass. But anyways, the first one was one of our site moderators, King Kala. He's from the province next over, and met him a couple times before, and actually we're going to be seeing him next week. He's coming here. So that's one. And back in 2013, podcast listeners may know, and Colton and you may know, but I don't think Magebin knows, but I actually went to New Zealand to spend 2 weeks with one of our site moderators.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, that has been done before.
Awesome. Awesome.
All right. Next one is from Tyler. Hey, hosts, I was wondering, what is your opinion of the current Treasure Hunter promo? I thought it was a step in the right direction of Jagex, since it can be done without much interaction and without having to rely on Treasure Hunter or RNG or buying a ton of keys. Second, what's your favorite book or book series, both fiction and nonfiction? And three, what was your favorite video game growing up aside from RuneScape? And that's from Tyler. So,
he's asking the hard questions.
We talked about Death Lotus training a bit before, but I think the general consensus was that it was the right direction for a Treasure Hunter promo. Anything else to add to that?
I completely agree with that sentiment. It's definitely a step in the right direction. It's still a Treasure Hunter promo, but it is definitely better than any one that they've previously had.
they're polishing that turd as much as they can.
Mm, yeah. They are all running out of wax.
So, book or book series? Majbit, let's go.
Dune. I have been reading the Dune series, including the prequels and the father's work, the son's work. I'm up to Mentats of Dune. I've read over 13 in the series. I can't remember the exact number, but it's well over that by now. I've been reading them since I was in middle school. To give you an idea, I'm 27 years old now. I started reading them when I was like 12, so I've been reading them for quite some time. I absolutely adore them. If anyone has not touched the Dune series, change your life by reading the Dune series.
Hmm. All right. For me,
Colton,
personally, I actually used this as a pick of the week a few months ago, but recently, and they're old books, but I just now started getting into them, the Wheel of Time series. Mm-hmm. Absolutely loving them. So that's enjoyable, but my all-time favorite thus far. And it's, and I started reading it, crud, that was early high school, so I think it was before the TV show actually was a thing. A Song of Ice and Fire, which is what the Game of Thrones series is based off of. Absolutely love those books. So,
right, and I think you wrote an Informer article as well?
Yeah, I did. That is a thing about how it's bringing fantasy and other pieces of nerd culture into the mainstream, and why that could be good or bad for us who have followed it for a longer period of time.
All right. Well, my favorite book or book series, I guess. Well, we'll just go with book. Going back kind of far for this. Okay.
Stumped Brave Shane New World. On this one.
There you go. No, Brave New World. That was good. Though, one thing I have not read that I definitely should, that's kind of on the same vein as that, is 1984.
Great book.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But
I loved that
Brave
book.
New World was good. So, got to get to 1984.
Fair enough.
And right. Video game as we were growing up.
This is the hard question.
Can you pick?
Yes. Can it be a series?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. If that makes it simpler.
It does. It would. So the Command & Conquer series. I grew up on real-time strategy games. And from a very young age, probably about 8 or 9, I started playing the Command & Conquer series. And they changed my life. I mean, I figured out specifically how to make 256K modems talk to each other across town just so we could play with my friends. Like, I adored those games. So I would have to go with any of the Command & Conquer games, as long as they were made by Westwood Studios. And EA can just kill themselves. I hate they ruined it, but I digress.
All right. Mr. Colton?
It's gonna sound hackneyed, but I'll give an alternate, but my all time favorite has to be Super Mario 64. That was my absolute favorite as a kid growing up, just getting the Nintendo 64 and playing that for hours and hours and again and again and again. But my alternate favorite was definitely GoldenEye.
Oh, you're hitting some serious nostalgia points with me here.
Oh yeah, that's
absolutely
good.
Absolutely loved good. GoldenEye. So
the late nights of late night sleepovers playing GoldenEye.
That's exactly how it was. Yeah. Oh, good times.
I cried, man. Oh.
That's great. Well, I mean, I completely forgot about GoldenEye until you mentioned that, and I was going to say, going back to the N64, the first Super Smash Brothers, which is actually the more modern ones played as a sport now, competitive, believe it or
not.
Oh,
yeah.
But if I was to go a little bit further ahead to turn of the century, I would have to say Tribes 2.
Hmm.
That's, ring anyone's
that's a
bell?
Good, that, yes, I. You can still play Tribes 2. There's a mod for it that... Yeah, I have it. Oh, I don't have it installed on this computer, but I have it installed on my other computer. Yeah, it's really cool. That's a really good game.
We've been trying to get a Tribes 2 server up and running, but unfortunately, the RSBNB server is Linux, so I don't think that's going to work. But
My server's Linux.
Tribes 2, definitely up there. It is the first video game that I played competitively. Well, not competitively, as we say, competitively today, but in-game community competitively.
Yeah.
So it was good. Thank you, Tyler. Huge wave of nostalgia with those questions.
Now I want my Nintendo 64 still works. By the way, anyone wants to come over and challenge me
too.
In Smash Brothers?
Mine too.
I will wreck you with Fox. Fox McCloud is my man. Sorry.
I used to be Pikachu.
Yeah, he was my alt. Yeah, memories.
Oh, this
memories.
Is great. All right, and Magebit, you can take the last question from
Earth.
Oh,
God. This is
all right. So these questions are from Earth here. It says, hi, everyone. Magebit, I apologize I wasn't able to make it this week. Packing is unfortunately time-consuming. Few questions. One, has Shane scared you away yet? No. I'm surprised I haven't scared Shane away yet, to be honest with you. Surprised he hasn't hung up on me and blocked me yet. Has Colton scared you away yet? Question number two. No, I don't know. Colton, you haven't scared me away yet. How you doing? Are you afraid? Are you actually getting to talk to me? Have I frightened you at all with my
my
manic rants?
you have not seen rants. We used to do those quite a bit in 2012 and 2013.
Yeah, listen to the prestige monologue of Shane's.
Oh, I'd love to hear that. I wrote an entire essay on prestige back when that was being tossed around because I was very passionate, I guess I would say. Anyway, number three, what do you think of Taylor Swift? I don't think of her often, but she occasionally comes on the radio around here, and you know she's all right. I don't have any ill will towards her. You know, she's a person, I'm a person, and you know we can both kind of exist on this. Yeah, we can exist on this planet and do our own thing, and you know I think everything will be fine in the end. Four, do you like Star Trek? Yeah, I do like Star Trek. I grew up on Star Trek. My dad was a huge Star Trek fan, so in turn I watched a lot of Star Trek. Also liked the remakes. I thought that was really
good.
Nice.
Me too.
J.J. Abrams
Same
did a good
both
job.
Of those. Well,
awesome.
We differ on that opinion.
Let's see. Number five. You don't like J.J. Abrams?
No.
That's fair enough. Yeah, he's controversial. five. Who
the
is
best
your favorite?
Thing that he did was bring Star Trek to a new audience, and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, and I think that's...
But as for the movies, they weren't that great.
Yeah, they were... I didn't hate them. They weren't your classic Star Trek. And I mean, oh, and for anyone who doesn't know, Deep Space Nine, if you live in the U.S., is on Netflix. So get on that.
That's the best Star Trek series lore-wise, story-wise.
Yeah, Deep Space Nine is great. So if you are in the U.S. or you have a VPN that can connect to the U.S., go check it out if you haven't watched it. It's fantastic. Me and my girlfriend binge watch them on the weekend. Number five, who is your favorite musical artist? You can pick up to five if you can't pick just one. Who is my favorite musical artist? Now, I don't listen to much music anymore, so my music references are going to be dated as of like 2005. So, I mean, if we go that far back, and give me a break, that was 10 years ago. So this, we're talking about teenage Magebit here. I was big into His Infernal Majesty. That was one of my favorite bands. I mean, that's probably my favorite band of all time, followed probably by Senses Fail. That was my other big favorite band. And so everyone now either loves me or hates me based off of that, of course. So most people, you either love or hate that type of music. But I also love a lot of electronic music, and I can't remember the name of the artist off the top of my head that does my favorite songs, but I do. I love, by genre, I love putting on ambient music, which is generally what I listen to these days a lot of the times when I'm editing videos or writing or things like that. I will pop on like Soma FM Space Station and just listen to that type of music. So that's kind of where I am musically right now, is I listen to a lot of kind of trance, down tempo, lounge, ambient music. I've chilled out over the years. So I think that wraps it up for do you want me to read Colton's questions as well, or should we pass that to him?
I can.
Sure.
Oh, okay.
I can read Colton.
Colton, one, how is it going? Shane scared you away yet?
First, the one going good, we will discuss that more when we talk about what I've been doing recently. Shane has, of course, not scared me away. He has not scared me away over the last few times I've been on, so no.
Two, why don't you call, why don't you ever call anymore?
I'm at home, Reed. I'm there are family people around, and I can only talk at night, so I apologize.
Who is your favorite musical artist? Again, you can pick up to five if you can't pick just one.
This one's tough for me because my musical preferences are wide. First of all, best of all time, Elvis Presley. That's my favorite.
Classic.
Second, Frank Sinatra. Third, I don't know, maybe Huey Lewis and the News or Foreigner, one of those two. And then you've got more modern stuff like Wolves at the Gate and Red, stuff that I like. So, yeah, that's what I enjoy.
How do you pack for university?
I throw it all in the back of my vehicle, and I drive 10 minutes to campus. The end.
Well, that's a lot simpler than ours.
Yeah, it makes it easy when I live so close to my college campus, so that's nice.
Indeed. Are you excited to go back to university?
Somewhat. For one thing, internet is much better there. Internet here, even though it's 10 minutes outside of that area, we still live in the country, and my parents aren't very good with internet stuff, and I'm not the greatest either, so that'll be nice. It'll be nice to be in a single dorm and not have my roommate experiences I had last year, so yeah, I'm excited. Thank you, Reed.
And finally, Shane, I already know everything about you. Love, Earth.
Oh, that is true, and the feeling is mutual. It's like we share a collective hive mind
consciousness. Collective consciousness.
Yeah. You guys have been using Soul Link before it was put in the game.
Aha, uh-huh, there you go.
It was cool. Hipsters.
All right. So there's your questions, everyone, this week. If you want to send questions in, email them. audioquestions@rsbnb.com is where you can put them. Or you can send us a text message with your question, or you can leave us a voicemail at 571-57-BNB. That is 571-572-2632. And that is an American number.
Ooh.
All right. So, ready for tech news, everyone?
Oh, yeah.
Born.
Okay. So, Alphabet is a new umbrella company for everything that Google has. And they say, G is for Google. Basically, Alphabet is going to be a container company for Google and a lot of other little experiments, let's say, that Google is running and doing. Now, you and I were talking about this pre-show, And the conclusion we came to is that for end users, they're not going to see a difference.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all. Yeah. I mean, this is mainly legal, you know, reasons for doing this is really what has kind of spurred them to kind of do this. This enables them to be a lot more flexible in the projects that they enter into. It also makes them a lot more resistant to antitrust, things along those lines. It's probably easier for them to get aid and patents and all that nonsense.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, as far as the regular end user goes, all the services remain the same. Google is still Google. It's just the literal definition of the company Google is a much smaller subsidiary of now a larger umbrella corporation is really the only thing that the average individual needs to know.
Yeah. And one thing I'd like to also touch on with this is you mentioned antitrust. Well, the corporate side of this, it also makes it easier. Say you have a company that's not doing well and it needs to fail or, you know, be shut down. It can do that without damaging Google itself and the reputation of Google when that happens. So there's that point also that we can take away from this.
In that specific scenario, would that assume that like damages as far as losses, would that not reflect in the overall company as far as like Alphabet as a whole? Like if a company goes under and needs to be liquidated, is that going to protect the stock price of Alphabet? Because it's a subsidiary company? Like, I'm not that into business to know the answer to that.
Well, see, that's the thing. Google and whatnot and Alphabet are still going to be traded as the same shares. So if you own Google today, you're going to own Alphabet going forward.
Yeah.
So it's not going to protect from that side of the equation. But if something happens, it will make it so that the impact isn't as large.
Okay. So it kind of almost, again, yeah, to go back to RuneScape here, it's kind of like Soul Link. It spreads out the damage.
Exactly. Exactly. And another thing that I'm hopeful for with Alphabet is that we'll see a decoupling of Google's corporate lobbying, which to me has always been disturbing, seeing as, you know, they basically control search on the internet and can, you know, determine what you see and when you see it, which is, as I said, disturbing to me. So if maybe the corporate lobbying part towards governments could be split off into the higher Alphabet company, that would make me feel better about Google.
It sounds like it's a deference of blame, though. Like the blame still exists. It's just you can take it away from Google and blame Alphabet. Like that just it's still there. It still exists. The evil is still being done if you consider corporate lobbying evil. I mean, I guess it has some purpose as far as I'm concerned, but it can be a very dangerous tool. Like, I think we can both agree on that.
That's right. And, I mean, it just comes down to, do you want a company engaging in lobbying who basically controls everything on your phone if you use Android or on your search engine if you're a Google user?
Hmm.
So.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of what-ifs in this scenario, definitely.
Yeah.
On a lighter news, if I don't know if anyone noticed, but Microsoft registered a domain called abc.wtf the day that Google launched abz.xyz.
Oh, Microsoft. That's interesting.
Just a little
lighthearted. Does that go anywhere?
It goes to Bing, actually.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, if you who is it? It shows to be a registered to a company that is in Redmond, Washington.
I wonder who that is.
I have no idea.
All right. That's Alphabet, everyone.
One last
okay,
thing.
Go ahead, Colton.
Can you say that word one more time for me?
Which one?
Shane, say alpha. Say that word.
Alphabet.
Okay. It's just, I couldn't help but think throughout that whole thing that you. Because it's alphabet. And when I hear alphabet, I think cereal. And now I want cereal. Because alphabets. I don't know. Do you have those in Canada, Shane? Alphabets? They're a lovely
I have no idea.
Oh, they're made by Post, I think. Sorry. Alphabet cereal.
First thing that came to my mind was actually alphabet soup.
That's another one. Very delicious. Sorry. Moving on.
I don't know. But anyways.
Thank you for your input.
Officially removed the 140 character limit from direct messages this week. So you can send messages up to 10,000 characters long now.
So, hang on.
I mean, it's...
Go ahead, continue.
It certainly opens up the idea of using Twitter as a messaging platform.
It always seems silly for me to, like, all right, I get the 140 characters on the front end, but on the back end, as far as on DMs, why limit yourself? That I always was boggled by the fact that, like, I'm privately talking to someone, not via, you know, the actual platform, which is a lot of the time, obviously, consumed via, you know, mobile devices. Why on the back end would you limit yourself to 140 characters? So this just seems like a no-brainer change for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And, I mean, obviously on the back end, it wouldn't have been limited, but, I mean... If you're direct messaging someone, I think you know what kind of conversation you want to have with them, and it's not going to fit in 140 characters.
Yeah, generally not. Well, like, tweets are bite-sized. I get, you know, everyone kind of gets that. But yeah, when you're entering into a direct message, again, like you just said, you're entering into a conversation at that point. And yeah, a lot of the times conversations are a lot longer than 140 characters per, you know, post.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Well, it's a good change, and I know I've been bit by it before, so I'll welcome it.
I'm waiting for the day that they get rid of 140 character limits on everything. That will be a beautiful day.
See, I don't know. Yeah. I think that that's one thing that really makes Twitter endearing. It makes everything. Every little post easily digestible for most people.
Every time I'm trying to post something, I find myself purposely having to misspell things, use the number 2 instead of the word. It makes me look like some sort of uneducated plebeian because I have to like devalue my own language skills because Twitter thinks it's a bad idea to be. Sorry, never mind. I'll stop.
Not for that purpose.
Yeah,
though.
We'll stop.
I mean, that makes sense.
but I mean, to me, the art of Twitter is figuring out how to say what you want to say in 140 characters.
I didn't realize Twitter was competing with the haiku market.
Well, you could write haikus on it.
yeah.
Would a 200 character limit be more realistic for you?
I'd like to see 240.
Okay.
240, yeah. I think, is a good balance.
All right. Well, moving on to our last piece of tech news then. There was a study of internet users in Poland and the United States comparing their use of Adblock. In Poland, 33% of internet users use Adblock, whereas in the U.S. that number is currently at 15%. Goodness. But the real story about this is that ad blocking will lead to almost $22 billion in lost advertising revenue this year. This was put together by Adobe and PageFair.
Wow. Yeah, I read a very similar article about the loss in revenue as a whole. It's shocking, but I think it also is a big testament to the fact that people clearly are offended or annoyed by the type of advertising that is currently being, you know, employed by, you know, content creators and websites and whatnot. Hang on, let me just disable my ad block real quick so I can look at this chart. Let's see here. So, wow, that's crazy just to think that. Uh-oh, am I losing everyone?
No, you're here.
Okay. Here. Got a little a little cut out there for a minute. Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm not surprised to see the numbers, or as far as monetarily wise. And I think a lot of that money could be recouped if the type of advertisements in general were changed. How does everyone feel about that?
Yeah, that is ultimately what it comes down to. And I mean, our RSVNB, we run our servers based on ads and donations. Now, our ads are not pop-up ads. They're not ads that give you spyware, try and force you to download everything. So, as a result, we feel our ads are the least intrusive of the kinds that you can get. Now, other websites aren't necessarily the case. They have ads that block out the entire page, make you click something, and, you know, might not even let you through after you do all that. So there is something to be said for annoying advertisements out there.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen applications, like freeware and shareware applications that can be downloaded, and they build advertising in to the application. And you know what? I'm completely fine with that. But when my application starts talking to me and playing full video advertisements inside there when I'm trying to do other things, that is extremely offensive to me. And yeah, I'm going to block that type of advertisements.
And then,
yeah. Go ahead.
Wikia, if you guys have been on that recently, has been, to me, the most annoying of them all. Their advertisements have gotten just overdone, and the Wikia site, I now have trouble using just because I can't deal with all the pop-ups and all the videos that want to play. It's offensive to me, and I don't like to use Adblock, but it makes me want to, you know?
It's funny you mention that, because actually I have a clan member who recently I was helping her with the fact that the Wikia page would not load at all. It was just broken. It was completely broken. And I asked, do you have Adblock enabled? And she said, no. I said, put Adblock on. She puts Adblock on. Adblock fixed the problem. The ads were so whacked out and broken that they broke the entire website.
Yeah.
Like, the only solution was to remove them.
Yeah, and that should not be something that's required. But on the other hand, you cannot take away a website's revenue. And we kindly ask that anyone who browses RSBNB disable their ad blocker, because we feel our ads are not intrusive and, well, they help pay the bills that keep us going.
I completely agree with that. Now, if you go to a website, and I think what we need is a smart ad blocker, an ad blocker that knows the difference between an intrusive ad and a non-intrusive ad, and is able to make that decision on the fly. And if we had a system like that, I think a lot of users would probably flock to that. That way you can, you know, suppress the malicious ads, but you could still get the type of advertisements that, you know, are not malicious and don't, you know, take up your entire screen or start playing obnoxious audio or things like that. Because let's be honest, advertisement is the way that most content creators make their money.
Yeah.
And indeed. I mean, without advertisement, there would be no content. So we have to support one way or another, you know, our content creators, or
that's
we're going to be
right.
really bored.
Yep. If RSBNB update goes away, what would everyone do?
I guess they would just have to listen to RuneScape Weekly. It would be horrible.
I see what you did there. Nice one.
I'm clever.
All right, everyone. There's tech news for the week. Hopefully that has been joyful and insightful to you. And now we're going to talk about Skill of the Month, where we have a lead change this week.
Woo!
Currently, JD Dunster 1 is winning our Fishing Skill of the Month with 4.2 million experience gained. Second place is Tim with 3.2 million XP gained. And third place is Flash with 1.9 million XP gained. Still roughly 15 days left to go in this month, so it really is anyone's game at this point. So always nice to see lead changes and a competition that's competitive after about the first week.
Yeah, this is quite... it's quite impressive. Fishing is not an easy skill. You know, I mean, I put in a lot of time into fishing. I currently have 5 million XP gained in this month, and I put way too much time into fishing. So, good on these people.
I think the most impressive of all this is that J.D. Dunster, however his name is pronounced, he started out at level 70. And has made his way up and is now, I think, around 90-ish. And is whereas Tim and Flash started at 99. So I'm just saying, props to him. He started from the bottom.
Yeah, look at
well,
that graph,
from the
man.
But
that
that's
is
impressive.
An uphill. That is an uphill battle on that line, man. I would not want to climb that slope.
You would not want to climb some of these slopes in these skill amounts, believe me.
Especially for the more viable skills.
Yeah.
Exactly. Alrighty, well, we do have some achievements of the week this week, so I will read some of these off. The RR Man got 99 Slayer on the 13th of August. Congratulations.
Yeah.
We also have Thieves, who got 99 Hunter on the 13th and 200 million Thieving XP on the 12th.
How fitting.
So that is a huge achievement there. Indeed. I know, that's his name, right?
That's too ironic.
I hope his title works with his name in some way.
Tyler.
Let me just finish these ones. Tyler got 99 divination and 99 farming on August 11th. Good job, my friend.
Nice.
Ryan Dougherty with 99 strength on the 10th. And it's Arceus with 99 fishing on the 7th. So good job, everyone.
Sweet deal.
Sorry, Colton. What was that?
Oh, no, I was just going to ask if there were any titles that related to thieving. I was trying to think, because I don't think there are any.
Yeah, I can't think of any off the top of my head, unfortunately.
All right. Well,
we'd have to ask
on.
Thieves about that.
I suppose so. I don't know. It striked me because his name is a verb, and I was like, there's got to be some title to make that work. Sorry, literary mind.
All right. So, Mishbit, I believe you have a pick of the week.
Indeed. So, I kind of did a little foreshadowing earlier with saying that my favorite game was Command & Conquer. Well, thanks to some wonderful modders from the ModDB community, it is now possible to play all of the classic Command & Conquer games out there with support for more coming in the future. It's called OpenRA. It's a completely open-source, cross-platform engine that runs, like I said, cross-platform, so you can play with your friends no matter if they have Mac, PC, Linux, doesn't matter. You can get it at openra.net, and it right now has Command & Conquer Tiberian Dawn, which is the original Command & Conquer game. It's got CNC Red Alert and Dune 2000. It also has in development currently Tiberian Sun as well, which is a big favorite of the community. So I have it installed on my other computer. I have to install it on this one soon. But if anyone is into the real-time strategy community, especially the old-school style of games, I highly recommend you pick this up because it is super fun. It has campaign missions for all the different mods already. It's updated pretty much daily. That's the wonderful part of it being open source, is there are new commit builds like literally daily, so you can always keep updating and yada yada yada. It has an API to add new mods into the game, so you kind of download the central core and you can pull new mods as they come down into that, and kind of works on on a modular level in that sense. So it's super cool. So if you're into real time strategy games and you like the old school feel of things, I highly recommend you check out OpenRA. It's really, really fun. And feel free to shoot me a tweet or something if you do and you want someone to play with, because I love real-time strategy games, especially the older ones. They're more my pace because it's what I grew up on. So check it out.
All right. Sounds good. OpenRA.net. So it's come to the point in the show where we talk about what we've been up to this week. So let's start with you, Colton.
I have been finishing up, in real life, I've been finishing up my summer, closing out work and everything. It's all coming to an end, and I'm getting ready for, I'll be moving back on campus next Wednesday, so that's a thing. On RS, I looked, and initially I was super psyched for the, and I still am really psyched for the Quest Point Master Cape, but being realistic, I just don't think I'll have the time to do most of it, so I'm tentatively going for the requirements, and the first one I wanted to do was to get the last Rider's lore drop from King Black Dragon and possibly get the KBD Dragonling at the same time. So 400 kills in and nothing yet, but I remain hopeful.
Keep the faith.
Exactly.
All right. And you, Magebit.
So I guess starting with real life, working on some recertifications, lots of studying involved in that to make sure, you know, I'm up to snuff. It's always fun getting recertified for things. Also working on a secret web project at the moment, which is a lot of fun, collaborating with a few other individuals. That will come to fruition in the next month or so, but we acquired a very tasty domain that I'm excited to use. In RuneScape, so much fishing, all the fishing. Working up, I'm trying to get 50 million fishing XP by the end of the month. So I can, because my goal is once the Elf City waterfall fishing comes out, is to just no life to 120. So that's kind of pretty much what I'm doing. Also, learning to PVM. I have some people, some of my listeners are teaching me the rounds in PVM, and we're making a video series on it at magebit.tv. And you can watch me pretty much make a complete butthole of myself as I try to do OKK as a tank. It's lots of fun. So that's pretty much what I've been spending my time on in RuneScape, is lots of fishing. I would say about 4 hours of fishing a day and probably 2 hours of PVM. And I stink at PVM, man. Ugh. To quote one of the comments on my videos, I didn't know it was possible to be this bad at PVM. Well, it is.
Well, we all have to start somewhere, right?
Yeah, I get it. Exactly. And that's, you know, and I figured why not make a public display of myself in the process.
All right. Well, as for me this week, I passed 86 million farming XP on RS.
Congratulations. Holy crap.
Jeez. You're getting there, envy.
Yeah, it's going. And we're looking at, by Christmas, probably, unless anything catastrophic happens, for the 120. So I'm really excited about that. Ever since passing 84, it seemed a lot more realistic and a lot closer than it actually is. Now you say, oh, 18 million farming XP, that's still far. But in reality, it's just a drop in the bucket compared to everything that I've done so far. So
oh my over God, 199.
Yep, that's right. And, I mean, everything I do on RS relates to that. Did some Fistigothics this week. But in addition to that, it's just the herb runs every day. Normally try to get 3 to 4 in a day based on the schedule and whatnot. But yeah, also did some elf thieving, which is horrendously overpowered if you have not thieved in Pristinus and you have the levels. I would highly recommend it. It's a great way of thieving.
The second I saw those XP rates, I was like, yep, that's my first 120.
Yeah, there you go. So, but aside from that, just a couple of other little side projects here and there, and that's about it. Anything else before you guys want to depart?
I just wanted to say thank you very much for having me on the show. It was a real honor to receive the invitation, and I've had a really fun time, and I just wanted to express that to you personally before we closed out the show. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, it was a pleasure having you on the show. You can, of course, find MageBit at RuneScape Weekly, which I believe is runeweek.com/podcast, right?
Yep, that'll bring you directly to the podcast directory. Runeweek.com is the main website. But yeah, mainly, yeah, we have also a YouTube channel as well, MageBit.tv. And so if the podcast is there, plus other series we do. Some series. I think one of our most popular series is probably The Worst Scammers and Hackers of All Time, where I just totally rip on, you know, really, really bad attempts at trying to, like, hijack people's accounts via YouTube and whatnot, as well as sometimes we do some, like, reverse engineering of programs that are meant to infect your computer. It's a good time. So, yeah, we have the podcast, we have the YouTube channel, and, yeah, that's my life right there pretty much.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on the show, MageBit. It was a pleasure having you.
I appreciate
it.
And Colton, where can we find you, aside from Informer?
You can find me on Twitter. I mean,
can talk about that.
What's you can't find me anywhere except for at Informer, really, online, because I'm not a podcast host, as it were. But I am on Twitter.
All right, well, that works. We can talk about Informer. So, informer.rsbnb.com for all of Colton's goodness in his articles, and more. So, with that being said, thank you for listening, everyone, and we will see you next week for another edition of RSBNB Update. We'll be right back.